Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. I hope things are going well for you wherever you are, and hopefully you're starting to get little hints of spring. We are here, and it's been beautiful out. But today I'm going to be interviewing an old friend, Alex Newman. He has a new book out called Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And we're going to go through just parts of that. It's so interesting, the history and just what has happened and why it's happened to our government school system and some of the solutions for it. But even if you don't have children in school, you probably have grandchildren in school, or you have neighbors that have children in school, or you know young couples at your church that have little children and they're deciding, what should we do with our children? Should we homeschool them? Should we put them in the schools or whatever? This book, if you read it, and then share with others. If someone reads it that loves their children, they're going to get their kids out and find some alternative, homeschooling, a Christian school, a co-op, whatever, because it exposes completely the lie of government schools, the success of government schools in destroying our young people. And it is accomplishing exactly what it is designed to do. And you see that he goes back 150 plus years and you see, oh my goodness, they've been working at this to destroy the children since the early 1800s in America. And so anyway, I hope you'll get the book after you listen to the interview, but I think you'll really enjoy this and learn a lot about what has happened and then use that ammo to wake others and to save children from this beast that is destroying their hearts, mind, and soul. Thank you so much, subscribers, for supporting us and what we do. We appreciate tremendously. Those that would like to become part of what we do, go to agendaweekly.com. It costs $5 a month, but it is a great blessing. And then you'll get all the resources we provide each week. But anyway, I hope you'll enjoy this interview. Alex Newman, thank you so much for joining me again today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Curtis.
I sure appreciate all you're doing and your recent work, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government Schools, War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It is what I want to talk to you about today. It's so vital because as a father of many children, myself, and I know you are as well, expecting number six, which that's wonderful. That's the most valuable thing that we do in life, especially as men, being a husband and a father, to raise that next generation. But there has been a war going on. And getting into this, I loved how you started and you went back to see the history of it. I think that's so vital for people. Everyone knows, you look at them today, yeah, it's rotten, but they don't understand the slow march, 100 plus years of doing that and accomplishing those goals of just dumbing the kids down and just making it what it is today. But why don't you start in that book? I love a little of that history. With Horace Mann and John Dewey, talk a little bit about them and just the significant influence they've had on what we're seeing today in our schools.
So the system as it exists today was actually laid down originally by Horace Mann and John Dewey. These are the builders, the architects of the system that we have today. Now, of course, it's been modified very significantly over the generations, but the foundation upon which it was all built actually started with Horace Mann. So he imported the Prussian system into the state of Massachusetts. And there's even a little bit of a background before that, too. I start the story with Robert Owen, who today is very obscure. Very few people know of Robert Owen. But he was a communist, a socialist before Karl Marx came along. He believed very fervently in these ideas that get rid of private property. We don't need the family. People should. He kind of wanted to create the new Soviet man before the Soviet Union was ever a twinkle in Lenin's eye. Right? He wanted to. And he, of course, had a flawed view of human nature because he rejected the Bible. He believed that man was inherently good, but that they were being contaminated through being raised in this hyper individualistic Christian environment where people clung to biblical morality. So he set up a commune. It failed, of course. And he wrote these essays arguing that the government ought to educate children. Which at the time, you know, people today think, well, of course the government should educate children. At the time, that was like radical, 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 because parents were primarily in charge of educating their children. And to the extent that they needed help, they went to the extended family or to the church. Homeschooling was the norm. And, you know, all the different church denominations had different schools and ways of helping families when they needed it. So his commune failed, and he came to the conclusion that that happened because the government had not educated the children. He saw that as the solution to this individualism. And his ideas did not catch on in America, but the Prussian ambassador, he talks about this in his autobiography. The Prussian ambassador apparently got a hold of his essays, took him back to Prussia, and the Prussian dictator decided, hey, this would be great. We'll build the first ever education system of the state, by the state, and for the state. And so that was the genesis of that. We also know from a whistleblower, a man named Orestes Brownson. Fascinating story. So this man was very much involved with the Owenites, as they were called, this kind of early socialist movement. And he eventually became a Catholic, and he repented of his involvement with this movement. And so he blew the whistle on what they were doing. And he said that Robert Owen set up a secret society, was the term he used, modeled on the Carbonari of Europe, which was a nasty, ruthless group of individuals. And their two surface level objectives were to shift public opinion in favor of at least allowing the government's camel's nose under the tent to kind of get started in education. And then they also wanted to get men elected to legislatures who would support the idea that the government should play some role in education. And he said, Orestes Brownson revealed in his expose of this, he said the ultimate objective was to get rid of Christianity. Those are his exact words. And he said, you know, we weren't going to come out and tell everybody that we were going to get rid of Christianity. The plan was to first get a system of state schools and then national schools where we would exclude everything that couldn't be verified by the census. And, you know, we wouldn't openly mock the clergy, but we would bring them into contempt wherever we could. And I think people need to understand how radical this was. When Alexis de Tocqueville came to America from France in the 1830s, he explained what a marvelous country this was, and he explained that virtually all education that wasn't directly under the control of parents was in the hands of the Protestant clergy. That was before the massive Catholic migration, and so there was no real government education at that time. Well, the system takes root in Prussia. Horace Mann brings it back to Massachusetts. Publicly says he wants to get the Bible out, and you know people are like, what? How could you have education without the Bible? That's like an oxymoron. It's ludicrous. So that idea died, but the quackery came rushing in. And then John Dewey picks up the baton. So after he finishes in Massachusetts, he travels the country. He preaches at all the state legislatures the good news of salvation by government education. Again, totally flawed view of human nature, rejected the Bible. He kind of got in with the Unitarians. You know, they started off with the heresy of denying the Trinity, and then pretty soon they're into full-blown communism. Amazing. So he sets up the system in Massachusetts, travels the country, and by the early 1900s, almost every state had government schools, had compulsory attendance laws. Now, it wasn't like today where you're going to hand over your kids for 9 months out of the year, for 5 days a week, for 8 hours a day. I mean, it wasn't quite that extreme. They still had the Bible there because, you know, parents wouldn't tolerate anything other than that. And then John Dewey steps in. So John Dewey was another communist. He took his cues from the Soviet Union rather than Prussia. And he was very open about his love for the Soviet Union. He wrote a whole bunch of articles about how great it was and how they were instilling a collectivistic mindset in the minds of the children. And that's what he wanted for America. Now, he differed a little bit with the revolutionary Marxists in that he didn't think armed revolution and violence was the way to achieve utopia. He thought a gradual approach would be more useful. But he outlined this crazy plan in 1898 to dumb down the population. It's in an essay he wrote called The Primary Education Fetish, where he said, you know, we have to do this gradually. If we force it unduly, there's going to be a violent reaction, is what he said. And he was right. There would have been a violent reaction. So he teams up then with the Rockefeller, and I'm trying to condense 200 years of history here
Oh,
into a
yeah.
very
No, it's
short.
great. Keep going.
Well, I appreciate it, Curtis. So he teams up with the Rockefellers, and this to people is really counterintuitive. Wait, you're saying a communist teamed up with the ultimate super capitalist to create this system? Yes, that's what I'm saying. Now, they had different beliefs, of course. Rockefeller wanted to make a huge amount of money. He had so much money, and he was getting attacked in the press. He thought, well, we'll give some away, and hopefully, you know, people will write good things about us in the newspaper. And so they teamed up. They started off with an experimental school at the University of Chicago under John Dewey's leadership. And the Rockefellers gave him $3.1 million, which at the time was a huge, huge sum of money. And interesting, they graduated a bunch of kids who could not read, who could not write, who could not do math properly, who could not tell right from wrong. And John Dewey and the Rockefellers both thought this will be perfect. So they set out to kind of nationalize this. Dewey ended up moving over to Columbia. They imported the evildoers who you know all too well from the Frankfurt School. A lot of them actually were laundered through Columbia University with the help of John Dewey and the Rockefellers. And they basically injected this poison through the teachers' colleges of the country and then through the textbooks, so that by basically the period after World War II, Dewey's ideas had taken firm root in public schools across the country. You had basically a dramatic shift in the worldview that was being taught to the teachers and then eventually to the children. He was so popular, he was made the honorary life president of the National Education Association. And I'll say one more thing about Dewey, because I think this is really critical for Christians to understand. He was a religious man, but not in the sense that any of us might recognize. He actually described himself as a religious humanist. And he and 30-something of his buddies, mostly from academia, got together and they wrote what they called the Humanist Manifesto. They really saw themselves as the creators of this new enlightened religion. And it's, for some perspective, the very first tenet of this new religion, and people can read this document, it's publicly available. It says, we religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created, which you can compare and contrast with the Word of God, which says in the beginning, God created. And you see right there, you have a huge clash. Now, as you keep reading through Dewey's manifesto, you'll find it's basically communism. We got to get rid of the profit motive. We have to reorganize the means of production. We have to have collective ownership. And ultimately, the core of this religion is that because there is no real God, that makes us all God. And so we can determine then what is right and what is wrong. We can determine the best way to organize society. Forget the Bible, you know, that's old-fashioned stuff. And I mean, really, it's not a new religion. It's actually a direct descendant of the same lie that Satan gave in the garden, right? Ye shall be as gods, etc. And for the folks out there who are listening, who are not religious, who are maybe not Bible-believing Christians, I want you to think about the implications of this, even beyond, you know, eternity and your soul. Our founding father said it was a self-evident truth that we were all created equally, and that God gave us rights, and the government existed to protect those rights. Well, what happens if you embrace John Dewey's religion? Well, you have no rights because there is no God. And so this religion gradually made its way through the schools, to the point where the Supreme Court in the early 1960s actually kicked the Bible and prayer out of schools under the guise of the First Amendment. And in the words of Justice Potter Stewart, who wrote the dissent, they actually established the religion of secularism, which John Dewey would have recognized as humanism. And of course, that was the plan all along. One of the co-signers of this manifesto, C.F. Potter, wrote a book, Humanism, A New Religion, where he explained that we were going to use the public schools to spread this new religion. What's your Sunday school going to do with some of the kids 1 hour a week against 5 days of humanistic teachings? So you wonder, how did America turn against God? How did we end up leaving our heritage behind? Well, that's the answer. A false religion from the pit of hell has now been taught to our children for multiple generations, supported by our tax dollars, and now we see the fruit all around us, the suicides, the shootings, etc. The history is just so critical for people to understand, Curtis.
Yes, no, and that key point that's in your book and you just made is socialism is their religion. A lot of people on our side don't get that. They think, oh no, it's you know, economics or whatever. No, it's a religion. And the reason the war was against God from Karl Marx forward and before, obviously, is because he's competition for what they're wanting to be. Most of them are not atheists. They know there's a God, but they hate that he is there and they are going to supplant him and be the rulers. No, it's so interesting when you see this, because then you realize, oh my goodness, this is why it's so deep rooted, because it was planted 150 years ago and slowly been growing and maturing. We didn't wake up until some people barely waked up in the 60s for a few moments. Oh, why'd they take prayer out? And then they went back to sleep. But we're waking up now where we realize the standards in Oregon. You don't have to read, you don't have to write, and you don't have to know math to be able to graduate. Well, that started long ago. It doesn't, you don't take that big of step in one day. Some of the other things, why don't you talk a little bit more? Because I got into this in my movies and it's so interesting, but just the significance of the Frankfurt School and some of their objectives in what they did and everything.
Yeah, the Frankfurt School is a huge piece of this puzzle, and you do such a masterful job exposing them in your films that, and one of the things that I think is really important to understand about the Frankfurt School is, first of all, they were an actual communist subversive movement, right? They got started with help from the Comintern. Their goal was always to subvert the existing order, to build a new order in its place. And with the help of the education establishment, they were able to poison the minds of Americans from coast to coast. So they came up with these outrageous ideas. One of the ideas that was very popular with them was the idea that the American father was a fascist and authoritarian, because he was oppressive against his wife and his children. Of course, this was a total lie. They just wanted to disarm fathers because they knew fathers would protect their families. Fathers would protect their wives and their children from all this wickedness. And so they had to demonize the father, try to force him into submission, and paint him as a bad guy for trying to protect his own family. Also, critical theory was a huge emergent idea that came through the Frankfurt School and really, over a period of decades, completely poisoned the minds of academia, of students. We're now dealing with the descendants of critical theory. We've got critical race theory. We've got queer theory. We've got all these descendants of critical theory, and it's basically just a repackaged form of Marxism, as you show so well in your movies. This idea that you're going to divide society into the oppressor and the oppressed. Marx, of course, was wrong. The working class clearly was not going to rise up and overthrow their oppressors, especially in a prosperous Christian country like America. And so they had to come up with new fault lines, new ways to divide and conquer. And so critical theory was a really, really important tool for that. And today we're seeing the fruit of that. And there's so much to explain on the Frankfurt School, and then how the big found the convergence between the capitalists and the communists is one of the things that I find so interesting. Yeah, the folks out of the Frankfurt School were actual commies. They actually wanted a total takeover of every element of life by the state. They actually wanted to completely wipe out conservative thought, Christian thought, etc. They wanted porn in the schools to break down social and sexual mores coming from the Bible. But then they teamed up with radicals with massive amounts of money. So I have a whole chapter in there, right next to the one on the Frankfurt School, about how the big foundations helped do this. And I didn't actually have to do a lot of original research. Congress did an investigation of these things back in the early 1950s, and they put out a report. They created a select committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations, and in this report, they actually concluded that there had been a revolution in America in the 1940s, and they said it never would have been possible peacefully if education had not prepared the way in advance. And so you have this incredible situation where these mega wealthy super capitalists who have, more money than anybody could ever dream of, we used to call them the robber barons, teaming up with communists who supposedly want to eat these super capitalists to fundamentally transform America. Same thing with Dewey and the Rockefellers. Of course, the Carnegies were big players too. And so people say, well, why do we have like the Frankfurt School, the John Deweys of the world teaming up with the Rockefellers and the Carnegies of the world? And the answer is simple. They both had this converging interest in creating a dumbed down, easy to manipulate populace. The super capitalists wanted obedient worker drones who weren't going to be philosophizing about statecraft and things like this. And the communists wanted a dumbed down, easy to manipulate population that would be willing to surrender its liberties, that would be willing to give up the Constitution, the Christian principles that undergird Christian civilization. And so they worked together on this. And the record is absolutely clear. No need to speculate. We have the documents to prove all of this, and yet not one in a million people knows it.
I know. And that's why your book is so important. And we'll talk about how to get it at the end. But for parents, for grandparents, you need to get it and read it. It's a nice short book, too. It's just facts, beginning to end, the whole story, what's happened, why it's happened, and what you need to do. But it's if people don't get it, what happened and why it's like it is, they just kind of give up because it doesn't, oh, that's just the way it is. And so it's so vital to understand, but also giving this book to every parent you know that you're friends with, but they still have their kids in the system because they think their little town is different, their little school is different, which everybody does. We're all prone to think, well, my thing is the exception or whatever. But if they were to read this, I think it would stir the hearts of many well-intentioned parents that knew, yeah, it's not perfect, but they didn't understand how purposefully evil it is. It's accomplishing exactly what it is designed to do. It's not a flaw. It's not a failure. It's not a fluke. It's doing exactly what the founders of the system wanted to accomplish with it. And that's what most people don't get. They think, well, if we just vote a different person in, it'll be okay or whatever. No. They're not going to allow you to do that because it's accomplishing exactly what it was designed to do. Anyway, it's just fantastic. Why don't you talk about, oh, there's just so many great chapters in here. Talk a little bit about, on a positive note, what happened with homeschooling and why during the coronavirus thing.
Well, for me, that's one of the brightest spots
Yes.
on the horizon is that we now have seen millions of families choosing to flee from the system. And I suspect we're going to see millions more in the years ahead. There is a veritable exodus out of the schools. A lot of the school districts are reporting a decline in enrollment of 10%, 15%. And that's not even factoring in the fact that the borders are wide open and a lot of people are bringing in new victims
That's
for the
right.
government schools. I think that's one of the reasons the education establishment is so violently opposed to border security. They know that their funding is going to get cut if families keep leaving and they don't find new kids to replace them. So millions of people have fled the system because what happened during COVID was parents got a real taste, first of all, what was going on in the schools, right? The children weren't in the classroom anymore. They were at home watching Zoom. And so parents are walking by and they're seeing, LGBT stuff. They're seeing crazy racial propaganda and they're saying, "What? This is what you're teaching my children? I thought this was for math and reading." So that was a real wake-up call for a lot of parents. You even had some school districts, even in conservative states, trying to get parents to sign something promising they wouldn't look at what their children were studying. A district in Tennessee actually got in big trouble. They tried to get parents to sign a thing saying they would not look at what their children were studying at home. Truly outrageous.
Yes.
So this big exodus took place. And you also started seeing a shift in the conservative movement, and also in a lot of evangelical circles, you had really prominent people. Franklin Graham came out and urged parents to pull their children from the public schools in New Jersey in response to these LGBT madness that had taken over there, and said you got to put them in a Christian school. You had Rush Limbaugh, right, 18 million listeners a week or so. Three times before he died, say, parents, you should get your children out of the public schools. You should homeschool them. So we saw a real shift in conservatives, by and large, stopped talking so much about how do we reform the system, and they started talking about how do we get the children out. Now, that's a whole nother debate, and I think it's one that's important to discuss, but I'm really encouraged that this is the direction the conversation is moving. We're no longer talking about, how can we tweak this to make it a little bit better or a little bit less terrible. We're not now talking about what's the best way to get the children out. So, massive growth in homeschooling. According to the Census Bureau, we saw a doubling in the number of children being homeschooled. And they actually controlled for, you're not just doing government school at home, you're genuinely homeschooling where the parents are leading it. So, huge bright spot. Depending on whose numbers you believe, we might have as many as 5 million children right now being homeschooled. We've got another, many millions in private Christian schools. Some of them, of course, woke. But this is really encouraging, and the word's getting out fast. And people are doing everything they can all across the country to get out.
Yes, and it's so important we have that model there because then it exposes the failures of their system. I really feel, and I know you do too, I've heard some of your videos, but there's going to be a huge war against homeschooling sometime in the near future because you cannot allow something to exist that exposes the lies, the failure, the incompetency, the purposefulness of everything. And that's what I love about homeschooling. That's why I first started homeschooling, Alex, is when I had a couple little kids and they were little, every young person I met that was really nice, I love young people, so I'd always go up and talk to them. When I said, oh, where do you go to school? Just for conversation, they'd say, oh, I'm homeschool. And I remember the day I came home, this was 25 years ago, to my wife, and I said, we're going to homeschool our kids. I don't know what it is, but we're doing it because I want my kids to be like those kids, where they can talk to an adult and enjoy a meaningful conversation and they can smile and be, just happy and energetic. And it's been a great blessing in so many ways. Why don't you get into a little bit how it's progressed now into, you talked about the far left's social emotional learning, how just manipulative that is of our precious children.
Yeah, the social emotional learning is the newest fad, and it is now everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's even coming into a lot of Christian schools. They're creating Christian SEL programs, and they sprinkled the Bible verse or two on there and made it Christian somehow. But folks, this is an incredibly subversive movement. And it didn't take long. Nobody had really done a critical investigation of this when I started digging into it. And so I was starting from scratch, and I figured they'd hide a lot of the bad stuff. Turns out it wasn't that difficult to find. I went to, for example, CASEL. It's the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. This is funded by Bill Gates, who, of course, brought in Common Core, partnered with UNESCO in 2004 to create global standards and global curricula. So I'm looking on their website, and they had a history tab. So I click on that. They took it down now after I exposed it, but I clicked on the history tab, and one of the first things on there was the idea for social emotional learning came out of the Fetzer Institute. Okay, what's the Fetzer Institute? I had never heard of the Fetzer Institute. Turns out it's a New Age occult foundation started by a disciple of Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company. They used to have these great invocations there where they would summon spirits and things. Totally bonkers. And so that's where the idea came from. And then I spent a little time on their website. So what they do is this is how they disguise it to parents. Well, we just want to regulate your children's social and emotional behavior. We want them to have good relationships. We want them to have empathy. We want them to have compassion. And so a normal person, a normal parent hears that and says, well, I also want my children to have compassion. I also want them to have empathy. So it kind of disarms them. And then when you dig right beneath the surface, you find out that they mean something radically different than a normal person would when they're talking about empathy or compassion. For them, having empathy means you have to sympathize with abortion up to the moment of birth. For them, empathy means you have to support open borders. For them, empathy means you have to support socialism. You have to support critical race theory and the idea that all people with lighter skin are somehow oppressors and all people with darker skin are somehow victims of those alleged oppressors. So you basically have to support the diabolical communist agenda to be empathetic. And so they're very open about now about how they're moving away from traditional academic goals, from traditional knowledge ideas, and moving toward what they call the affective domain. These are your attitudes, your values, your mindset. And again, this is not secret, right? Anybody can go read these documents. Anybody can go read these programs. I'm not like going into the smoky rooms as a fly on the wall. I'm just reading their documents. And so they now do a lot of this through highly advanced psychological manipulation, through behavioral conditioning. They do a lot of it now on tablets so that the data is collected and analyzed in real time through algorithms to determine whether the child has the right attitude toward homosexual marriage or open borders or abortion. And when you don't have the right attitude, well, it just keeps coming back for more and more interventions until you do. It's a very dangerous system. Has nothing to do with helping your child properly regulate his or her emotions. It has everything to do with indoctrination and manipulation to turn your children basically into weapons, into Marxists who will wage war on their families, on their churches, on their communities, and of course on their nation.
That's right. No, it's part of that fifth generation warfare that we've talked about here before, people that are listening, but that it's focused at our children to capture their hearts and minds and souls and turn them against the parents, against our country, against God. And so it's very strategic and purposeful, but it's very effective. And that's why these schools are deadly, because a child is not ready to deal with that kind of warfare and prepared to stand against it and notice the propaganda, notice the deception and the way they're twisting things. And it is vital we get our kids out of there to save them from this. Talk about a little bit about Mao, how this is so is familiar with what Mao did in Red China with the children and stuff to get them all on his team. And Hitler kind of did the same thing. Get the children on your side, and then you've got the future, even if the parents don't like what you're doing.
Yeah, so totalitarians have understood for a very long time that the route to power involves the minds and the hearts of young people. And that's why there's been this obsession over the last century by tyrants to collectivize the minds of children in public schools. Hitler understood this very well. He actually said in a quote that was brought up at the Nuremberg trials that whoever owns the youth gains the future. And he's absolutely right. I mean, if you can manipulate 80, 90, 100% of the next generation, those are the business leaders, those are the political leaders, those are the cultural leaders, those are the educators of the future, and you've got it, right? You get a 1,000-year Reich unless America comes in and deals with it. And Mao understood that as well in communist China. So one of the things he did, very similar to critical race theory. Now the fault line was a little bit different. It was a different context with a different culture, but the principle was the same. He divided society up into two categories. There was the red classes and the black classes. And I've spoken to multiple people who survived the Cultural Revolution about this. They all share the same testimony. The goal was, as stated by Mao and the regime, to destroy the olds, the old culture, the old ideas, the old traditions. And the mechanism to do that was to teach that there was this constant class warfare going on, that the black classes were oppressing the red classes. And so the black classes were landowners, they were business owners, they were Christians, they were people who still clung to the old ideas that supposedly they were exploiting the red classes. So the red classes were the landless peasants, the workers, the Communist Party soldiers, etc. And so they would actually do this to children, right? Oh, your parents are part of the black classes. Well, you need to now stand up in front of your peers, your comrades, and denounce your horrible, evil parents. They're the reason for everything that has gone wrong in our culture. They're the reason that people are hungry, that people are being oppressed, things like this. And it ended up in a very short period with children denouncing their parents, handing them over to be executed and tortured. And people think in America that we're immune to that, that somehow those things couldn't happen here. The exact same tactics are playing out right now. And so, I've spoken on these issues across the country. Everywhere I go, I talk to parents who are just crying. My kids won't talk to me anymore. They found out I'm a Republican, and then now they say I'm a fascist or a Ku Klux Klan or a white supremacist. They found out I like Trump or things like this. Well, why is this? Because they have been brainwashed to believe that parents and that whole generation are the oppressors. They are the reason for climate change. They're the reason for exploitation, poverty, etc. And so they turn on their parents. Very, very dangerous. And of course, Jesus and the Word of God talks extensively about this. A kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. In fact, in one verse, it says it will be laid waste, it will be brought to desolation. So what they're doing is they're trying to divide Americans against each other. Now they've expanded the categories. It's not just skin color anymore. Now they tell the little girls in kindergarten, "Oh, well, you do have light skin, which by definition gives you white privilege. You're clearly an oppressor." But if you were to pick one of these letters from the alphabet, if you were to maybe identify as a non-binary shape-shifting genderqueer, you could be one of the oppressed as well. And the little girls say, "Oh, be an oppressor, I'll be an oppressor. I'll pick a letter from the alphabet." So very, very wicked manipulation of these children. But we've seen these tactics before. They lead to the same place: hatred, division, and ultimately the collapse of the old for the rebuilding of the new, or as Biden says, the build back better.
And that's really what it's all about. They could care less about the kids individually. They want to destroy them because they want to destroy our country and set up their little utopia. And so, yeah, that's it. So that's the heart behind all this that people need to understand. It's totally purposeful. It's totally premeditated. It has been, generations in the making. And the people are that evil. They're actually that evil. That's what I think Americans, with our Christian foundations, loving our neighbor, things have a hard time. Even when my movies first came out, too, the same thing. They're like, are people really that premeditated? Yes, because Satan is alive and well, and he is
That's
their
right.
commander in chief, and he hates everything that God has designed, and he will not stop until everything has been flipped on its head. And this, what they're doing to our children, is just a key part of that plan for total destruction. Alex, what are some things in here then that you talked about? Okay, here's some things people can do to stand up.
So I actually end the book with a final chapter, and I make the analogy, the school building is on fire, right? And your children are trapped inside, and you can hear their screaming, you can smell the burning flesh, you know this is not going well. And you need to think about it in those terms, right? This is a mortal threat to your children. And I mean that literally, right? There's an explosion in child suicide. It's now one of the leading causes of death among children. This was unheard of just a generation ago. We've got the kids now shooting each other. We've got them overdosing on fentanyl. This is actually a mortal threat to your children. And so if you're thinking about your child in a burning building and your first response is, "I think I'm going to run for school board," or "I think I'm going to sign a petition or lobby my state legislators," you either don't have children or you're not a very good parent, right? You want to run into that building as quickly as you can, grab your child and run as far as you can, as fast as your legs will carry you. And honestly, the fire is not a adequate analogy, because what's happening here is much worse than just physical damage. It's much worse than even physical death. We're talking here about things with eternal implications. We're talking about your children are being destroyed, not just physically, right? They're being castrated, they're be double mastectomies, hysterectomies, but they're being destroyed emotionally and spiritually and academically. I mean, in every possible way, these children are being destroyed. So we must get them out. I mean, we must get them out. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. And that'll probably look different for every family. You know, if you can homeschool, fantastic. I believe that's the gold standard. If you can't, there's a lot of different options out there. There are co-ops, there are micro schools, there are pods, there are good Christian schools that are doing very, very important work. But that's the most important takeaway, is get your children out. And then I end the book after that last chapter with an afterword, which is actually quite extensive. What I wanted to do was look back at, first of all, what does the Bible teach about education? What does the Bible teach about discipling and raising children? You know, now we know what we're running from, but what is it that we're running toward? Do we just want to redo government school at home? Well, no, right? We need to ask ourselves some of the most basic questions. For example, what is the purpose of education? The world has its view. Satan has his view. And of course, the Bible and God, who authored the Bible, has a very different view. And so I go into what the Bible teaches on this. I go into the history. You know, what did education in America look like prior to the emergence of this diabolical system? And I make the case that we really do need to rethink this whole thing. Over the long term, I think the objective needs to be to allow the old system of so-called public education to collapse. We don't need the government educating our children. It's an unbiblical idea. Parents should be primarily responsible for that, just like we're responsible for feeding our children and putting them to bed at night. We ought to be responsible for educating them. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't delegate some of that responsibility, right? We can assign some of that to a Christian school, to a church co-op, whatever it is. And I think that I encourage people to do that. Find a co-op, find other people to do this with. But whatever you do, parents, keep in mind God is going to hold you accountable for the choices you make. Those children are entrusted into your care for a brief period. You have clear instructions about what you are to do in terms of discipling, training, teaching. You know, Deuteronomy is a good place to start. Deuteronomy 6, Deuteronomy 11. You're supposed to be teaching your children about God and His laws when you wake up in the morning, when you're, you know, sitting down to eat, when you're walking by the way, when you're going to bed at night. All times you're supposed to be doing this. And, you know, we must take those admonitions seriously, if we claim to be Christians, if we claim to believe the Word of God. So it ends with some really extensive treatment on these issues. What do we do? And you know, I think we need to be very careful here too, because there's a kind of another movement that has popped up that says, well, yes, all that's true, but let's have the government fund our homeschooling, or let's have the government fund our private schools. And, you know, I know most of the people making these arguments are very well intentioned, but it, you know, it starts, first of all, with the presupposition that the government ought to be in charge of our children's education. It starts with the assumption that we ought to be taking money from our neighbors to educate our children. I think that's a bad assumption. And maybe even more importantly, what the government funds, the government will control. So parents, just be very, very careful on this issue. You know, don't get ensnared or tangled up with the government when in the education of your children. Do your very best to stay true to the Word of God, to stay true to what works, and to keep separate from the world's system that is just beyond corrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not trying to duplicate what they're doing in the school system. I've seen so many parents overwhelm themselves trying to have 8 periods of 8 subjects. You don't have to do that. You can sit down and have cookies and tea with them and tell them all the things you've learned in your life, how you
Amen.
became wise, who the people you learn things from, and things like that. It's so vital that you are walking along with them in the way. Whatever you do for a living, find things they can do to help you in that, where they're starting to learn that they're part of the solution instead of the problem. And they're a vital asset to this family. They're not just another mouth to feed. They are someone that is there to enhance the family, to have a bigger impact in whatever areas God has you out there doing things. So you just, it's so vital. And is it work? Yes, of course it's work. But so is training for the Olympics if you want to go there, or so is starting a business and running. Everything is work that is profitable and that is worthwhile. But I'm just telling you, after having done this now for about 24 years, it's the greatest single thing that there is. The relationships I have with my children, I wouldn't trade you for a billion $5. And I would not have that relationship with them if they hadn't been there all day long with us and, yeah, driving us nuts sometimes, but also having so much fun together and having so much time for me to teach them everything I've learned in my life and try to impart that wisdom so they don't have to learn things the hard way. So parents, I know you love your children, but the world has lied to you and told you it's loving to put them in the school. They need to be socialized. They need this, that, whatever. It's all lies. It's all part of the fifth generation warfare. You talk to any homeschool, you'll realize instantly they're socially adapt and very comfortable with people. You talk to any government school kid. I love young people. I always go talk to them. They cannot even look you in the eyes. They cannot carry on a conversation with you. They are misfits, and they're supposed to be because that's the system, what it's trying to do. Alex, where's the best place they can go get a copy of this book?
So thank you, brother. I agree with everything you said. I mean, homeschooling is one of the best decisions I've ever made in my entire life, and the same is
Yes.
true for my wife. We wouldn't trade it for any amount of money. It's just an incredible joy. Yes, it's a sacrifice. Yes, it means smaller house, older car, but what could be more worthwhile
Yes.
than the well-being of your children? So, easiest place to get the book is Amazon. Unfortunately, for people who don't mind waiting a little longer and paying shipping, they can order it from my website. I'll sign it for them and put it in the mail. It takes a little bit longer, and again, I can't do free shipping because I'm not Amazon, but that's at libertysentinel.org. And so whatever people's preferences are, it'll be in bookstores soon and all the rest of it. We're working on the audiobook now as well, so.
Okay, no, that's wonderful. So everybody, if you're going to go to Amazon, and none of us like it, Alex doesn't either, but if that's where you usually go for things, make sure you leave a 5-star rating. That is vital. That's just as important as buying the book and funding him and getting this information to share with others and yourself. But leaving those ratings so you can get hundreds of 5-star ratings so it starts putting it out there more for him. I know how those systems work. If you want to buy in quantity and stuff, yeah, buying directly from libertysentinel.org is great because then he's making all the profit. He's not having to split it with Amazon. And yeah, he's happy to sign them or whatever, but it's worthwhile. I've already ordered 20 copies, so I'm not just telling you to do something that is not valuable. You will see this book not too thick, which is good, because people just don't have a lot of time nowadays. It's perfect in that it gives you the whole story, but in a short format, easy to read, very interesting. But then when you're done, you have all this ammo to educate others. And then just get a copy for every parent you can think of, every grandparent, every young family that don't even have kids yet or have little kids, get it for them so they'll know right now, oh, we're not doing that. It's just, I'm praying, Alex, that it'll be a tremendous success in waking the troops. Another key tool to wake the troops where, who knows, I pray that 1 million kids will not be in that system because of this book and their life will be completely different as they raise their families and things continue forward. But I appreciate your time so much, Alex.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate so much the opportunity to come on here. Thank you for all that you do, and God bless you, sir.
Thank you so much. Well, I hope you enjoyed that and learned a lot. And I hope you'll consider going to get a book because you will not regret it. It is really powerful. It is a concise explanation of exactly what has happened. And it's really, really powerful. So I hope you'll go to one of the links below and do that. It's a blessing to him, but it will be a blessing to you because you will so much more completely understand what has happened. And I think there'll be someone that you know that you can give that to, and it might change the way they raise their kids or whatever. It could be a tremendous blessing. Our verse for this week is Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's what we're talking about. We're supposed to train up our children in the way they should go, and we're not able to do that if they're gone from 4 years old on, and we never hardly see them, and they're hanging around fools, which the Bible says the companion of fools will be destroyed. He has clearly laid it out for us, what we must do and how we must do it in Deuteronomy 6 and everything. But I just want to encourage you in that as you're training up those children, just know God will bless those efforts to teach and instill in them the truth. And until next week, God bless you.